Hello.
Hello, I'm Georgia.
And I'm John.
And today we're going to talk about the mac and cheese of movies.
Mmm.
Comfort Films Podcast.
Season 2.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Comfort Films Podcast. This is episode 101.
101 in the sun.
Like riding on the 101.
Yeah, it's a nice day, top down, riding a good 1 mile an hour down the 101.
It's as fast as you can go.
Mmm.
Today we are going to be doing our third and final week of our Robin Williams month. It is a bit short because we did take a Thanksgiving break.
We ate a lot of turkey. We needed a lot of a nap. What can I tell you?
Just the whole week.
Yeah.
But if you're really hankering for more Robin dubs, you can go back to episode 23 and listen to The Fisher King and get your fourth episode fix. And actually that was one of my faves. So... no loss there. Even if you listened to it once already, go listen to it again. It's a great movie. It's a great episode.
Rediscover the Holy Grail for yourself in your home.
But today we're going to be talking about Mrs. Doubtfire, which came out on November 24th, 1993.
That is so long ago.
30 years.
Wow.
If you can believe that. Actually, 30 years like this past week. So that's pretty exciting.
That's, I mean, you know, when you think about that, it makes everything really, really weird for me. There's no other way to put it.
I've decided I don't want to do this movie now.
I don't want to talk about it because it makes me think about my age, and I'm in my middle age, and I used to not understand Bob Seger. Now I'm starting to understand Bob Seger.
That's like the line of demarcation in life. Like
it is.
Pre-Seger, post-Seger.
Look at Forrest Gump.
It's great.
Yeah.
Another old movie now.
Oh, my God. Oh, my
but
God.
But yes, this stars Robin Williams.
We want to talk about it before our last breath.
Yeah. This movie does star Robin Williams, which is why we chose it for the Robin Williams month.
That's a good reason.
And also Sally Field. This is like a real, like, classic Robin Williams performance, I think.
Yeah, because
he does
all, everything.
Like, the frantic, like, comedian kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. Super high energy, but also it's like the acting is like top tier awesome.
It's incredible.
As usual. And Sally Field is one of our ultra fave actresses, so she's killer in this also.
She's so good. We saw her in an off-Broadway production of Edward Albee's The Goat, and she was so good.
With Bill Irwin. Popeye, by the way.
So. Yes. See, it all ties together, guys. And she was so incredible because, you know, I mean, there is no second take. You know, there's no lunch. It's just you do the show. You're on stage. And the transformations that she would go through right in front of your eyes. You know, I always thought that she was absolutely incredible. But it's like watching the Hulk transform before your very eyes.
Yeah, you know? She was so good in that. It was just like, wait, I knew she was good, but now I'm like, she's on a whole nother level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really absurd play, too. So it's hard to, like, be super grounded and real, but, like, never did I question her once.
No, she's the person that keeps Smokey and the Bandit on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we really enjoy
it. That's a hard thing, man. Come on. Those guys are nuts.
They are. Fred is wonderful. He's very calm as well.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
But today we're going to talk about how she held down the fort in Mrs. Doubtfire, which she did and did a great job of. So I remember watching this movie. I don't think I went to see it at the movies.
I didn't.
I do think that, well... my most clear memory of this film is that one summer when I was in high school, and it must have been like a year after this had come out, I was asked by some people that we knew from town to work with their kid to teach him to read better. They had bought Hooked on Phonics, and they wanted me to kind of guide him through it and also kind of do some Mrs. Doubtfire style, you know, babysitting and cooking lunch type stuff.
Did you have a lot of good outfits and voices prepared?
No, I did not.
Oh, well.
I was not ready.
Okay.
But it's okay.
That was expected, right?
The kid's name was Boyd Pepper, and he had a video of Mrs. Doubtfire, so that was really all he needed. And I just remember every day I would go over there, and he would be watching this movie again, and he would be watching the scene where Robin Williams addresses Mrs. Doubtfire's crossing the street, and a person comes and, like, snatches his, her purse. And Robin Williams yells at them in, like, the Daniel Hillard voice. And that made Boyd laugh harder than anything ever has made anyone laugh in the history of the world. And he would just watch it over and over and over and over and over. And I particularly enjoyed that Boyd was obsessed with this movie because he looked like a very small version of Robin Williams.
Really?
Yes. He had the same haircut that Daniel Hillard has. To me, he had a very similar, like, face. He was kind of a small, kind of compact type of person.
Okay.
Like Robin Williams. So I just got a huge kick in my own head. I've never even said this to anybody, I don't think, about Boyd thinking Robin Williams was so great, because I was like, yeah, because that's you. And then he just loved that one scene and watched it so many times. I think I sat and counted that he watched it like over 80 times in a row. Just rewound it, watched it again, rewound. Not the whole movie, just that scene.
But in one sitting.
Yes.
Wow.
Without doing anything else.
80 times.
So, needless to say, apologies to Boyd's parents. I don't think we really did much Hooked on Phonics. But I did, like, make him lunch so while he was rewatching Mrs. Doubtfire scenes over and over for, like, hours on end. And I have no idea what happened to Boyd. I have not kept up with this child. He could be a serial killer or a U.S. congressman. Neither of those are that different. But, you know, I came up with what I could come up with. Who knows? But I sometimes think about wondering if he still watches this movie and if he really still loves that scene, or if he made himself sick of it, or if he even remembers any of this.
Okay.
I sometimes wonder. So
you can have a favorite part of a movie. I had a favorite part of Beverly Hills Cop 2 that I would play over and over and over and over again. And, you know, my house growing up, I was in the living room playing this. And my dad was, like, on the other end of the house, like, in his bathroom. And I just kept watching this one part. And, you know, we had seen it together, and he had laughed. We both thought this part was very funny. But I don't know, maybe after six times, my dad was like, hey, John, can you shut it off? You know, can we move on? I heard it, okay?
That's great. I have that with movies, too. I mean, The Princess Bride, I would just watch the sword fight scene over and over again, like, 50 times. I would totally do that. And I still would, actually, because it's awesome.
Well, my dad had that. He did have that. It's with Caddyshack.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a particular scene, and I will save it in case someday we end up doing Caddyshack. That was one of his favorites. Saw that so many times growing up. But he had a part that he would watch over and over. He loved this one part of the film so much, he made me take my boombox, record the audio, and give it to him. Just so he could, like, have it, you know, whenever he needed it.
Yeah, well, I'm honestly sure that Boyd probably exploded the videotape from watching it too many times on this part. So, you know, it's like, whenever I watch this again, I just, like, think about, oh, that part's coming. I'm going to see it again. But yeah, I was probably, so I was like 94, so I was probably like 16 that year. So this was a little bit after my parents had gotten divorced. But I am struck when I go back to watch this again about how much and how well it deals with that theme of children having to deal with their parents getting divorced.
Yes.
And it does it in, like, a really sensitive and cool way, I think. Because, yes, this is a kid's movie, although there are so many non-kid-friendly jokes in it when you go back and look again. Like, some of the rapid-fire stuff that Robin Williams says is, like, massively inappropriate. But I didn't know that at the time, and I wasn't watching movies with subtitles at the time. And now I am, because I'm old and deaf and can't focus. So, like, and when I see some of the stuff he was saying, I'm like, whoa, hello. But, you know, at the time, I felt like this was, like, a kid's movie for kids. And I think it deals really nicely with, you know, what kids have to go through when their parents are getting divorced.
Yeah, for me, I saw it after my parents had been divorced. I saw it on television. I've talked about my pay-per-view fiasco, you know, in my youth, where I would see the same movie over and over and over again. And I watched Mrs. Doubtfire for the first time, and I didn't know what to expect from it. I'm going to be very honest with you. I wasn't sure if I was going to love it or hate it. I was like, okay, he dresses up as the housekeeper, and none of the kids know it's him, and his ex-wife doesn't know it's him, and he's an actor, and he can do all these voices. So I was like, oh, man. But, you know, it's like, I was like, you know, Sally Field, Robin Williams, these two superstars, Pierce Brosnan, Robert Prosky, who I was becoming more aware of at that point. And so you have all these top shelf actors in the production. And you also have this information that it's going to deal with divorce. And divorce is such a, that's hard on everyone involved.
Yeah, it's a very hot button topic too. And, you know, I think there's different movies about divorce that come to mind.
Yes.
Kramer versus Kramer.
Kramer versus Kramer is high on my list. So get this. Kramer versus Kramer, we have that whole scene where Dustin Hoffman is there with his son, and he thinks that he can cook all of a sudden. He thinks it's not a big deal, and he, like, sets something on fire. The smoke alarm goes off. And Mrs. Doubtfire, we have a similar situation. And that's where her fake breasts catch on fire. You know, it's like that same thing. It's this attitude of, oh, yeah, how hard can it be? You know?
Yeah.
We do
like
see
men effing around and finding out, basically.
I mean, you know, we do have, you know, some other things in this movie that come up. Tootsie, you know, that was something because that was big. And again, it's Dustin Hoffman. What is this?
So what is this?
This is a Dustin Hoffman movie. When we were watching this, my mother was visiting and, you know, she's like, you're watching Mrs. Doubtfire, sees Robin Williams and is like, is that Dustin Hoffman? And I was like, wow. You know, so it's like that
strong.
Well,
she thought we were watching Tootsie for a minute.
Oh, wow.
I think.
Okay, okay.
And thought that this movie was from the 80s. And we're like, I don't think so. but yeah, and then what she said, I was like, wait, she totally is right.
See, it's the same movie. It's like she saw through the movie, you know, and you could see the roots.
Well, because you do have like the awkward moment where like the bus driver sees, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire and's like in love with her instantly.
Yeah.
I love that, you know, Robin Williams is a woman for like 23 minutes and is already getting hit on by someone and inappropriately. That seems very true to life to me.
Oh, man.
Unfortunately.
Jesus. Yeah, that's horrible.
But yeah, I do think maybe things that I wouldn't have thought about at the time, but now that I've watched like a billion and three other movies that come to mind.
Yeah, well, it's Mr. Mom. Mr. Mom is a big one that comes to mind.
Okay.
You know, because it's like we have, you know, Robin Williams, Michael Keaton. It's like we've got the father that's holding down the house while the mother is
Wooking.
Is Wooking. Yeah, yeah, that's like, you know.
It's Wooking.
Oh, it's working as a Wookie. Wooking. Yeah, so.
Or you just heard South African for a couple minutes.
I don't know what happened there, but yeah. Both stories, you know, both Mr. Mom and Mrs. Doubtfire have a similar theme where you have the father. He's going to be with the kids now. He's going to be doing stuff at the home. He's going to be preparing meals, getting them to do homework, cleaning the whole nine yards. And in both films, you know, the guys have to really work to make that happen. It's in no way an easy project.
Yeah, no. They have to, like, completely overhaul their whole situation.
Yeah.
To, like, figure out how to make this happen now.
Well, and we also have, okay, in both films, in Mr. Mom and in Mrs. Doubtfire, we have the mom, Terry Garr, in Mr. Mom, okay, and in Mrs. Doubtfire, of course, Sally Field. So what happens in Mr. Mom? Well, Terry Garr is working in this high-powered position, and her boss
is Martin Mull.
Yes, yes. That's, yes.
My mind has just been blown.
Okay, I thought like something went wrong for a second. No, yeah, I just... it's that incredible, right? Because I was like, oh my God, it's Martin Mull. And then Martin Mull is the one that kind of, you know, brings up this whole thing that's going to happen with Stu, with Pierce Brosnan.
I mean, I was assuming Martin Mull is kind of Sally Field's boss in this too. Either her boss or like a coworker or something.
He seems like maybe a little senior, but he's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I mean, he's not, yeah. She's obviously like a high-powered... whatever she is, interior designer slash architect, whatever. But I felt like he was kind of in charge and being like, oh, we're going to assign you this project because you were requested or whatever. So I just, yeah, like my brain just fell out of my ear because that was insane. A connection that you made and I didn't make it. Well, awesome.
It's, yeah, look, I had the same thing too. And I was like, there is so much Mr. Mom. Again, the difference, divorce, pretty big topic.
Also, I think Martin Mull is like a skeeve, like hitting on Terry Gard.
Yeah,
and
he's
Mr. Mom.
Yeah, he's
and in
really
this,
scummy
he's just like,
Mr.
you
Mom.
Know, a cool boss.
Well, this is like making up for Mr. Mom. It's like, you know what? I'm just going to be cool for a little bit. You know, he was just like really friendly, you know, and I was like, again, like Mr. Mom gun shy when I saw it. I'm like, oh no, Mull, don't do it. Don't do it, Martin Mull. And, you know, because I'm a big Martin Mull fan, and
oh, yeah,
I have been
not?
Since I was a kid. I was like, Martin
Colonel
Mull.
Mustard,
Colonel
dude.
Mustard. Yeah. Just always great. Always great. So we have that connection, you know, and again, we could keep going down the line, but it's, you know, Michael Keaton.
But
and
I can only
Robin
take
Williams.
So much.
Yeah.
So we should probably stop.
We may both totally
that Martin
freak
Mull
out.
Point just totally took me out, so I need to recover now.
I thought you were going down. I thought this was like the end times.
John
so,
has
yeah.
just finally done it. He's just finally pulled out the piece of trivia that has taken me down.
Only here on Comfort Films Podcast. Yeah.
Weaponized movie trivia.
So let's take it. One more step with this movie stuff because it's
steal
so
myself for it. Okay.
get ready. This movie, in a lot of ways, is like a James Bond film.
That I can see.
Yeah, because what is happening? Robin Williams is going undercover to, you know, make his mission a success. What does he do? It's almost like an assassination of Stu, Pierce Brosnan, and he has to go in, you know, into disguise, you know, and he's
yes.
sneaking around.
Harvey Firestein is like the ultimate best Q ever.
Yes, he is the king of Qs. And, you know, Harvey Firestein, I mean, man, they should just put him in everything. Because as soon as you see him, like, all right,
I'm in. I mean, put him in everything. I'll watch it.
He's
I love
great.
Him in this.
He's so good.
He's my favorite character in this, easily.
Yeah. And he had to, like, you had a funny story about, like, you read how he got the part on this?
Yeah, so, I guess, like, Robin Williams had been on some sort of a comic relief or something and kind of did an impression of him. And so, he was, like, flattered by that and said, oh, that's, you know, great. And they'd talk to each other and stuff. And so, then he heard that, you know, Robin Williams was going to be shooting a movie in San Francisco and that he was going to have a character who was like a gay brother, and he was like, oh, that's going to be me, you know? So, like, he, like, comes out of, like, his trailer or somewhere, and it was just like, you know, kind of ends up kind of lobbying for the part, and he got it, and I'm personally thrilled by that, because, again, Frank is my favorite character. I just love everything about him. He's a perfect choice to play, you know, this brother of Robin Williams, because the Daniel Hillard character is like so crazy and over the top and wild. And then you have Harvey Firestein playing the brother, and you expect that he would also be kind of like over the top and stuff like that. He's not. He's like super normal, you know, and he has a crazy job. Where he and his partner, like, do makeup, you know, like, movie-type makeup. And he's funny and amazing, and you want him to be your best friend, or maybe that's just me.
No, he seems awesome.
But, like, he's so great. But he isn't, like, that nuts. You know, in comparison to Daniel, he's pretty normal. However, he's all too ready to, like, just go for this idea, you know? So he's, like, the best brother ever. Because Daniel shows up and is like, What does he say? Like,
could you make me
a woman? And he's like, honey, I'm so happy. And like gives him a hug immediately. And you're like, what's going on? And then of course they go through all the ridiculous, like different get-ups of trying to make him a woman. and they end up with like this one that looks very motherly. But I just think that Harvey Firestein just brings so much awesomeness to this movie as a whole.
Yeah.
I want him in my family and as my bestie and everything. I just want this person to be real because I just love him that much.
He just seems so cool. And he's so talented. In Death to Smoochie, another Robin Williams film, he plays the bad guy. He's a mob boss. He's a mob boss for like a children's charity, which is wonderful.
Yeah, and he has like that insane voice.
It's so good, yeah.
Which is kind of turned down a little bit in this, but in that, it's turned all the way up and it's great.
Yeah, well, but it's a perfect villain voice and you would never think of that.
No, because he doesn't seem villainous like in the least.
No.
But he can do it. He's great at it.
Really good.
And I also think it's pretty cool that they have like, you know, this great movie makeup effects character as like this cool person in the movie when this won an Oscar for best makeup, because that actual makeup that, you know, Harvey Firestein's character did is actually done by real makeup people who did a just absolutely phenomenal job, because obviously like we can tell it's Robin Williams. I know what you mean about, like, your suspension of disbelief is kind of like,
Yeah, I'm jaded. You know, it's like, again, I need to believe.
And
you
I
know?
Get that. I get that. Because, again, yes, like, the kids and the wife all know that he's an actor and he does a million voices. And his brother, their uncle, is, like, a makeup guy who does, like, prosthetics. So you're kind of like, could you guys not figure this out? But I think the idea is that it's just so kind of outrageous that, like, if this is happening, that nobody would ever think that anyone would do that. Like, I wouldn't. I wouldn't think that somebody would be, like, so nuts and off the charts crazy that they would just be like, well, if you don't let me spend time with my kids, I'm going to, like, dress up as, like, an elderly housekeeper and come and do it anyway. Like, who would do that? Like, a nut. That's who would do that. And that's the whole thing. Like, Daniel's been driven to this by his, you know, upset over the divorce and his upset over not getting to spend time with the kids. And he is basically just, like, a large child at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, they really try to highlight that. They show you his hair. It's disheveled, kind of hanging down in these loose bangs. And then at the very end, when he's in court, he has his hair brushed. You know, and then after that, you kind of see it and, you know, stages of disarray. It's falling. When he comes to pick up the kids again, his bangs are all down. So it's not like, you know, he had to stay that way. But there were changes. I'd say one of the big changes that we saw in Daniel is that now, you know, he could cook. He could clean.
Yeah, his apartment goes from being like a pigsty to being like a nice, clean place.
Yeah, yeah. And he also learns how to be a parent as well as a friend to his kids. I think that he really was just joining in too much as a kid and putting all the parental responsibility on Miranda. And that's, you know, it really makes sense now when you watch this film why she wanted a divorce. Because she says it, you always make me the heavy. And she doesn't want to be. But if she isn't, then nobody's going to be there to, you know, drive the bus.
She's the only responsible person in this family.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a huge point for me, because when you watch this as a kid, and I wasn't like a young kid, I was like a teenager at the time, but I felt very sympathetic to Robin Williams when I watched it. I was like, oh, it's really sad because he, you know, he's just like a big kid. He's like such a nice person. And he just loves his kids, wants to hang out with them. And, you know, why is that so wrong? And I kind of saw Sally Field in like the villain kind of role. Now that I'm watching it as an adult, I'm like completely the opposite. And Daniel is like so irresponsible. Many parts of me don't blame her for not wanting to leave her kids' care entirely to him at times. You know, I do think it's kind of a jerk move, you know, when she drops the kids off late and picks them up early and kind of, you know, blames him because she's like, well, I have to be responsible for this and this and this and this and this. So I have to go by my timeline. Well, that's not super fair, okay? That's kind of a jerk move by her. But he has been, like, so irresponsible financially. Like, I mean, the first thing we see him do is, like, drop out of a job, a voice job that he's doing for this cartoon. And it is for a good reason.
Yeah.
But it also just highlights that this guy's not, like, dependable in a way. You know, so it's, and I think that that's a really good setup because it shows you that, like, he's doing things for the right reasons, but he kind of needs to get a grip on himself a little bit. Like, he shouldn't really be in that position where he's in a movie, he's doing this voice for this movie, and he finds out, like, halfway through it that, like, the little bird is, like, smoking a cigarette and he's not going to promote smoking to kids. And he just decides to walk out at that moment. Like, I don't understand why he wouldn't have been more aware of this from the beginning. Like, are you just reading the script for the first time when you're doing the recording? Like, I may be overthinking this really hard.
No.
But this is just what came up for me. And it's like, okay, so you walk out because you're not going to promote smoking to kids. That's cool. But then 2 seconds later, he's picking up his kids from school, taking them home, telling the one kid who it's the middle child who's the son that it's his birthday and that they're going to do like a party thing when the mother has said no, you know?
Yeah.
But then he brings a whole petting zoo to the house. It's filthy. He's up on the table dancing with the kids, making a hellacious mess. And, you know, the mom's been working all day, comes home to this hellhole
mm-hmm.
that she's going to have to take care of. And how many times has this happened?
I'm sure it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And it's, man, well, you see, what's interesting is that this is actually based on a book called Madame Doubtfire. And this is a UK book that came out in 1987. And this was to talk about divorce. And for the most part, you know, we have similar things that we hit upon. You know, we have a family that is split through divorce. There are 3 children. The father does dress up as the housekeeper. In the actual book, from what I understood, I just read the synopsis. So if someone is out there and is like, this is my favorite book and I know, then I'm sorry I blew it. But what I saw, you know, just from reading a synopsis of the book is that they're already separated. This has already happened. So we don't see the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Mm-hmm.
And the father actually is, you know, he's an out-of-work actor, but they say he's irresponsible. And he also sometimes works as like a nude model for like, yeah, like
an art class. A children's book, okay.
Yeah, it was dominated, I think, for like 3 different awards, yeah. So it's pretty wild, it's pretty wild. So I was reading this, and I was like, okay. I was like, this is like, wow, there's a lot going on here. And, you know, so it was really popular because it did such a good job of talking about divorce. And, you know, in the book, it's a situation where Mrs. Doubtfire is not that good at housework, but is an excellent gardener.
Okay.
Okay. So what happens is, you know, this art class, you know, where he does the nude modeling sometimes, Miranda lets him have the class there because they need a space. And somehow, I don't know how, his disguise comes off. Miranda sees it's Daniel, that Mrs. Doubtfire is a sham. They have a huge fight in front of the kids. And then what happens is she hires him as the gardener because he was such a good gardener.
Okay.
And that way he's still able to spend time with the kids.
Okay. That's weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, it's like all these things are in progress, like at the beginning of the book.
Well, it's a book, too. Like, it would probably make sense to me in a book.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's really weird, but it's, I wanted to discuss it because I was very interested in where this material came from. And I think it's also very interesting that they're already split apart in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a situation where the Miranda character in the book is saying, you know, I'm going to limit your time with these kids. You know, so it's, you know, okay, so let's go to this thing with the smoking. Man, okay, they did a really good job in this. They did a really good job presenting a question. The question is, are you going to do something that you are morally opposed to receive a paycheck? Okay. And, you know, then it is also something that you can look at as, this guy is so irresponsible. He's not bringing anything into this family financially. He's not bringing anything in here as a parental role model. You know, it's just like another kid.
Yeah.
You know, that you have to take care of. So it's, Yeah, it's, I understand your point too with the script. I had the same question.
He makes a morally correct decision.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, I just question his decision-making to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why is it that he is not looking for other ways to support the family? If he can't, you know, if he can't do it in this way, and he has three kids, why is he not doing something else? Like, clearly, Miranda is fine, right?
She is good. She is good.
She is bought a house in San Francisco. They live in this amazing house that we've actually seen in person because we drove by and looked at it. You know, she drives a nice car. The kids are in great clothes. The house looks good. Everything's good. She's got a high-powered job. She could do this by herself easily, financially speaking. But what is Daniel bringing to this relationship and this family? At the beginning of the movie, not much. And I do think that he has to have, like, this come-to-Jesus moment where he has to fight to stay a part of this family. Because otherwise, he's, you know, he loves the children. I know that's a big part of it, too. So I'm not trying to discount that being important. But it can't just be that. Like, it can't just be like, oh, you love your kids, but you don't help them grow. You don't support them. You don't do anything else. And through this transformation into Mrs. Doubtfire, he really grows into being a different person and a better father, which is great because it just made me think of it being like super Shakespearean. Like, Shakespeare loves a story of somebody going into disguise for whatever reason and learning a whole lot about themselves and becoming a more well-rounded person through that experience, like Viola in Twelfth Night or Edgar in King Lear. So I'm pretty psyched about that, and now I'm going to go write a thesis and get another master's degree on that.
That'll be good. That'll be good. Mrs. Doubtfire and Billy Shakes, a love story. Yeah. I would check that out.
William Doubtfire. Yes.
William Doubtfire.
William Doubtspear.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, I would definitely go see this at the Old Globe, you know? I would be in the seats. I would be on the ground. Whatever you want, Growling. I would go. Yeah.
All right. I got it. It's good.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's interesting. I do think that's interesting. And I think it's a growth experience for him. And, you know, a needed one because he is an ultimate mess. And he's a mess throughout. Like, he's a mess even while he's playing Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, his kind of behavior toward Miranda is pretty crappy because he's constantly trying to, like, mess with her relationship with Stu. And something that I think I would point out that I thought was really interesting about this movie is that Stu is never really portrayed as a bad guy. Like, Pierce Brosnan is, like, insanely hot in the 90s. Like, everybody would want to marry him, you know? So, like, she couldn't really do better on that. Yeah. He's charming. He's attractive. He's successful. And he's, like, he's tremendously interested in Miranda and likes her kids. Like, there's nothing bad about this guy. And they could easily have tried to make him into some kind of a villain so that you would think Daniel looks better and it would have pushed Daniel and Miranda back together because Stu is such a vile person. But he's not. Stu's cool, you know?
Yeah, he's a wonderful character.
He's a much better fit for Miranda than Daniel at this point in her life. He's a great potential stepdad figure. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with him at all. However, Daniel's behavior to him is really crappy. And he's constantly trying to put a wedge between Miranda and Stu, talking shit behind Stu's back to Miranda, saying really weird stuff to Stu to try to throw him off. Like, it's really jealous jerk kind of behavior. To the point where, you know, once we're in that insanely cringe restaurant scene, he puts, you know, cayenne pepper on Stu's meal and almost kills him. So, you know, and of course that reveals him because then Daniel has to, like, save his life and do the Heimlich maneuver to make, you know, to make up for what he's done. But, like, it's really poor behavior on Daniel's part.
What I think's interesting about the relationship between Stu and Mrs. Doubtfire is that, yes, it is horrible. Mrs. Doubtfire is vile, rude, creepy. There's that one shot where it's like Mrs. Doubtfire's up in the window and Stu is on the ground and she sees him. And it's like Psycho. It reminds me again, Psycho. Norman Bates' mom up in the window. And it's like he gives Stu the finger. You know, it's like he doesn't like Stu. He hits him with, what is it, a piece of fruit?
A lemon, I think.
Something, you know, it's just like, but what Stu does is he remains gracious and kind and invites Mrs. Doubtfire to every event. And it goes so far that when it's revealed that Mrs. Doubtfire is in fact Daniel, Stu is cool with Daniel.
Yeah.
There's like, you know, there's no real animosity. It's like, oh, I get it. You know, and that's it. That's
how cool Stu is.
He's a great person. He's a great person, and he is a great fit. And so many times we have these stories where relationships break up because your love has succumbed to the wiles of another who is purely evil. And in this film, it's like, okay, a relationship happens because Miranda's longing to be with an adult. And she knows this person from a long time ago. It's very natural. It's very organic. It's where her life is going.
Yeah. And so that could have, you know, it's something that could have been. She ended up with Daniel instead. And, like, there's that whole conversation that they have at the beginning. It's a very good scene between Daniel and Miranda when they do split up.
Which was improvised, I think. I think they improvised a lot of that drama because that was one of the things that was said. You know, Chris Columbus, I believe, actually was one of the writers on this project because this went through many different rewrites to really find the heart of it. And Chris Columbus, you can see in interviews, will say, you know, what's most important is the feeling of the scene. He's not concerned with the words. So he let them really find the truth in these scenes. And again, it just shows you the strength of Robin Williams and Sally Field, because they make these really hard transitions seamless. Because, I mean, we start off this movie, you know, like we talked about, we're at the animation booth doing VO. Then, you know, we have this crazy party. And then we have this argument that ends it all, that ends their relationship.
Yes.
They're able to do that. These are really highly talented people that were really receptive. They were really listening to each other. And these words really hurt them. You know, people are tearing up. People are really just going the distance in this film. And this is also fun because in a psychological kind of study way, because we believe in Robin Williams. We are conditioned to believe Robin Williams is the good guy.
Yes.
Everyone is. It took a long time for me to understand, whoa, what he's doing is way out of control.
Yeah, he's like emotionally manipulating everyone.
Yes.
To get what he wants.
Yeah.
It's selfish.
And it
could be damaging to the kids. Like, pretty quickly, Lydia and Chris find out that Mrs. Doubtfire is actually their dad. a little bit in a traumatizing way, because Chris, who's played by Matthew Lawrence, an excellent child actor, adult actor too, but I just remember him a lot from when he was a little kid.
Yeah.
You know, walks in on Mrs. Doubtfire in the bathroom and realizes that Mrs. Doubtfire is a man. And goes, you know, runs and tells Lydia, and, you know, they're really freaked out. And then, you know, Daniel reveals to them that he's their dad. But Natalie, the smallest kid, who's played by Mara Wilson, talk about weaponized, it's like weaponized cuteness.
Oh, my God.
Mara Wilson is, like, the cutest kid from, like, the 90s ever. Like, every movie she's in, she's so cute. You just are like, oh, my God.
We're his goddamn kids, too.
She's got her little lisp. We're his goddamn kids, too. You know, the way she says it is so cute.
It sounds like a Christmas greeting. It's just so sweet from
her,
you know?
She's like a little mouse, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Lisa Jacob is Lydia, and that was the kid I related to the most because I was, like, the oldest daughter, and I thought it was hilarious. I was like, oh, so you want to hire a housekeeper for $300 a week instead of just making the oldest daughter take care of everyone. Nice idea. Wish my parents had thought of it. But yeah, so.
Pretty good. Pretty
you know,
good.
She's, but he does tell her to take care of the little one. So it is kind of like, you know, making the oldest kid responsible. You wouldn't know about this because you're an only. But. And that has its own problems when your parents get divorced and you suddenly go from, like, being a family of three and having two parents in your house to, like, only having one. It's a whole mess.
Well, it's very different. I mean, this movie helped me with the idea of divorce. And so it's very successful in that regard for me because I could accept divorce, that my parents were no longer together. It was a strange feeling. I felt embarrassed.
Yeah.
I felt like, was it my fault?
You know, God, many kids every do kid this. Yeah. Every kid thinks it's their fault.
Yeah, and it's just like you're in this really bad area. You know, both your parents are going through a lot emotionally. It's a confusing time.
It's extremely traumatic.
Yeah.
Because your entire sense of stability is destroyed. And yet, you know, a lot of times, and certainly in the case of my parents, it was the right thing.
Mine too.
And this really did help me, I would say, even though, like I said, I was older. My parents had already been divorced for like 4 or 5 years by the time this came out. I still would say that watching this really changed my perspective on divorce from being like, it's always bad and always wrong to, hey, sometimes parents probably shouldn't be married. And, you know, maybe, you know, really just the truth of it, which, well, what my thought of the truth of it is now, which is, you know, maybe they were together at the beginning and it was good and it was meant to be and it worked out and they had kids and that's cool and the kids were supposed to exist and that's great. But that doesn't mean that they're always going to be together forever as that same family unit. But just because you don't live together or things are different, you know, it doesn't mean that you're not still a family. And this is very effective at telling that message because it does show you a couple who at some point, you know, really loved each other and had these kids and they had a good family. It's no longer good. It's no longer serving any of them to keep going the way that they're going at the beginning. But they can all still love each other and still be a family. And I still think there's definitely love between Miranda and Daniel. You know, she does value who he is as a person. She values how much he loves their kids. But she also, you know, can't be with him anymore. So even though he changes and becomes a better person, he's still not her person by the end of the movie. And I think that that was a really honest choice to make. To not have them get back together. To have them move on. Because that's really the truth of what, you know, happens 9 times out of 10. In a divorce.
It's very nice to see a strong positive resolution at the end of Mrs. Doubtfire. It's sad because, you know, I'm a person where you always want to see the couple get back together. Like, they're going to do it right this time. I know they can do it. And you really want to see that. And when you have two actors as strong as Robin Williams and Sally Field, and both of those people have a lot of heart. There is so much depth in there, and you want it to be good for them. When you like people that you're watching on screen, you don't want bad things to happen for either of them. But again, this movie put Robin Williams and Sally Field in a tremendously horrific situation. Because Robin Williams, though at the time, you know, again, maybe just because of my youth, I felt like Robin Williams was the good guy. Because Robin Williams was the good guy all of the time in the things that I saw. And Sally Field, you know, it's like, okay, Sally Field doesn't want them to have fun. Sally Field must be the bad guy. You know, like that was the thought that I had in my head. So it's like you take these actors and Sally Field, you know, is actually doing something so difficult, which is, it's like you can tell there's a real person under there that's fun and vital and happy, but they have so much responsibility that's been, you know, just dumped onto them that it's making it so they can barely function. And the person that they are can't exist. They're just like an emotional cleanup crew all of the time. They're the ones that are handling, you know, the emotional dirty dishes.
Yeah, and they're, you know, their partner is the fun one.
Right.
And, you know, never takes responsibility for anything. You know, he says, oh, we were going to clean up before you got here. Like, were you? Like, how much do I believe that? Like, I don't.
Like, why would you shut that down if you had, like, a whole zoo there? I mean, that's a pretty great party.
And
also,
he just wants to be liked. He just wants the kids to like him.
Well, it's because he is a kid. And again, it's all about performance in this film, too, right? Daniel is an actor. And how does Daniel find out how to be a better person? Through acting. He explores Mrs. Doubtfire. He goes a completely different way. He modifies his behavior and he realizes what he needs to do. Because there's no way in my eyes that the character of Daniel would have understood how to move forward in life, how to be a better father, you know, than if he did this. Because he needed to make the change, and there was no other way that Daniel would have made the change. He is a guy that liked having fun, he liked playing around, and responsibility was simply for someone else.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think that that's such a good point, but with him becoming, you know, acting, and that's how he finds things out. Because he really...
Very method, yeah, yeah.
He does throw himself into the role, you know, mm-hmm. He gets the costume, he gets the makeup, he gets the voice.
Yep.
And then he starts studying, like, you know, he was watching Julia Child on TV and learning how to cook and learning how to do all these things so that he can be the best version of Mrs. Doubtfire. Could he have done that before when he was just Daniel? Sure. But it's only through him kind of having Daniel subsumed by Mrs. Doubtfire, by the character, that he's able to focus on that and also become a better Daniel, because, you know, he had to get a real job, right? He's supposed to be, you know, just working in this kind of like, I guess, mail room at a television to like ship out film cans and stuff, like shipping and receiving. And, you know, he ends up meeting with kind of like the head of this TV station and telling him how bad, you know, the current children's programming is.
That's so good, because he doesn't know that he's actually talking to the boss.
Yeah.
And
so he's super honest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then when he figures it out, he's like, oh shit, you know, I just screwed up. But it turns out that the guy actually is happy to have heard somebody being honest instead of just kissing his butt. And through that experience, you know, Daniel kind of does what he should have been doing in the first place. He ends up with his own kids show, you know, where he actually plays the character of Mrs. Doubtfire, which he's really perfected at this point. And, you know, he gets to talk to other kids about, you know, dealing with divorce or coping with, you know, things that are difficult for kids. It's almost like a Mr. Rogers type of show.
Yes.
But with Mrs. Doubtfire as the main person instead. And I think that's really great. I think, you know, we grew up on Mr. Rogers. Mr. Rogers is from, you know, Western PA, where you're from.
He's from Latrobe, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of, so many people who came out of Western Pennsylvania entertainment worked for Mr. Rogers.
Right, like we George always Romero. Were hearing them. Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, that's super great. And
Michael Keaton also worked with Mr. Rogers as a grip. Yeah, there's so many. Yeah.
I love that. And, you know, I loved that show when I was little, and it really was a show where you have a grown person who's really helping children with hard emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's super important, super fantastic that they turned, you know, Daniel's kind of character into a person who could help all kids. I love that ending. I think it's just brilliantly done.
Well, it's so well done the way that they structure the film. Because what we see in that scene at the restaurant where he has to meet with Mr. Lundy, where Daniel has to meet with Mr. Lundy, and he also has to be with Miranda, Stu, and the family, it is showing you, you cannot be both the father and the mother. You can't be. You can only be one. You know, and that, I think, is just so well done. And it's subconscious. It's not something that you may think about when you're watching the movie. But Daniel is trying to be both of the parents.
Yeah, well, and Miranda has been both of the parents the whole time. And, you know, it's that's a really interesting point.
It's and what also works so well in the film is that Daniel does get his own television show. And that's because he matured as a person. Why did he mature as a person? Because he came up with this character. So everything really feeds each other. And it's a very creative way for a person to grow up. And it's like growing up through playing.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing for me with Mrs. Doubtfire. I mean, I said it once. I will say it again. I felt weird that my parents were divorced. After I watched Mrs. Doubtfire, I was like, this is just a normal thing. I can just say this to people and we move on. And it's fine. There doesn't have to be any trouble at all. There's no fear. You know, it's something where growing up, I was like, oh, my parents will never get divorced.
Everybody thinks that. Right? Yeah. I mean, I had actually said that I had talked to my mom about that like a year before she and my dad got divorced. I'd had a bad dream that my parents got divorced.
Really?
And my mom, yes. And my mom said, oh, that would never happen. That'll never happen. And then like a year and a half later, guess what? You were wrong. It happened. And, you know, I don't know what it was like for you. I know you went to a Catholic school, so maybe you had the similar experience that I had, but I went to a small school and I lived in a very conservative area, and I didn't have friends whose parents were divorced. Not many. I only had one person who I'm thinking about now in my class. You know, I went to a really small school. It's only 25 or so people in my class, in my grade. And out of all of those kids, I can only really think of one other kid whose parents were divorced.
Mm.
And they had been divorced since he was really kind of like a toddler. So it was nothing new to him. My parents got divorced when I was 11 or 12 years old, which is already a terrible time. I had just moved to a new place. I didn't have a lot of friends. And then suddenly my parents are getting divorced, which totally screws up everything else, you know. And it wasn't like the norm at all. So I didn't really have anybody I could really relate to. It's funny because me and that one person ended up becoming really good friends over the next like 6 years of our lives after that. But at the time, we barely knew each other. So it's just something where it was really difficult and I did not have other people who were in that situation that I could relate to. So having this movie was really meaningful to me in a way that I don't think I really would have shared that with anyone to say like, oh, I really love watching this because it really kind of made me feel normal and okay about the fact that my parents got divorced. But it did. Like, it really did. And I was conscious of that when I was watching it.
It's a healing movie. That's why I would say this is such a good comfort film, because it shows you divorce. It's very clear. It doesn't sugarcoat it.
No.
It is a movie, so we are going to have a resolution. You know, of course, he gets his own television show. But it's all worked into the story so well that you can accept it. It is. It's like a fairy tale, but it's not, I don't know, overly sappy. It's not unadorned.
It's not saccharine.
Yes.
You know, it's not falsely sweet. You know, it's honest. And it shows you how hard it is and how much problems you have from it. I mean, when the kids, you know, are first visiting him the first time, like in this new apartment, and, you know, they're eating Chinese food at like a table with like mismatched chairs, and there's just crap piled up all over the apartment and stuff, you know, and then the kids are definitely being caught, you know, between their parents who are fighting, you know, and they're negative to each other. Like, you know, Daniel is very negative toward Miranda, and Miranda's very negative toward Daniel. And it's funny because, like, Mrs. Doubtfire, like, corrects Miranda about this. And I'm like, you just did it too, Daniel. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that betrayal aspect, that's difficult for me.
That's the hardest thing for me to stomach as well.
Yeah.
The way that Mrs. Doubtfire speaks to Miranda sometimes is kind of like on the edge of not being okay. And then the way that Mrs. Doubtfire talks to Stu is over the edge of not being okay. And especially some of the things that Mrs. Doubtfire says to Stu about Miranda are not okay. And I still think they're not okay. Like, it's not cool that, you know, Daniel behaves that way. I mean, in a way, I think, you know, as human beings, we can all understand that he's hurt and he's lashing out, but that doesn't make it right. And, you know, it's also traumatizing on top of the fact that the kids have already been traumatized by the divorce. It's very traumatizing for them to then, you know, form an attachment to Mrs. Doubtfire, especially Natalie, because she never finds out until the big reveal that Mrs. Doubtfire is not a real person, but actually her dad. I mean, she's 5 years old. You know, that's got to be really hard for her to understand. And I don't think that they really unpack that very much. But, you know, they do say, like, oh, I miss her. You know, I miss Mrs. Doubtfire. And it's not they miss Daniel. They miss Mrs. Doubtfire. So having Daniel get the show as Mrs. Doubtfire so that Mrs. Doubtfire still kind of exists to them is a nice thing for them as well.
I think it's nice the way they end the film with Daniel driving away with the kids in the station wagon, and they're going down the hill, you know, and it's like sunset, and it seems good, and we're inside with Sally Field inside the house, and she's watching Mrs. Doubtfire on the television, and she feels at peace.
Yeah, because in that scene, Mrs. Doubtfire is actually reading that letter from the viewer, the little girl, and saying, like, you know, just really saying, like, that families are still families even if somebody gets divorced. And it's like Sally Field's character, Miranda, is getting to understand that it's okay. Because I think throughout the whole movie, she's kind of felt like she's failed and she's messed up and she's hurt her kids. And Daniel has kind of encouraged her to continue to feel that. Mm. And in that scene, he kind of is saying to this little girl, not to her, you know, getting divorced is just a thing that happens and it's okay. And it doesn't mean that your parents are bad. It doesn't mean they don't love you and whatever. So it's like both of them have found peace in the fact that they can be divorced and still be good parents, you know, and it's not destroyed their kids' lives. I think that's a great scene. And it's a good bookend to the scene where they decide to split up. You know, it kind of bookends it.
Yeah, it's like here we start, here we end. And it is a happy ending in the most realistic way.
And a resolution. It could be a happy ending. Yeah.
It's again, I like having a film like this that can still be there for you. And it, you know, when you watch it now when you're older, it's different because you're aware of, you know, the vicious things that Daniel and Miranda do to each other. And, you know, it's so difficult because you see their children caught in the crossfire of it. And that's what happens so many times. You know, the further that you're away from a traumatic incident, you know, like divorce, you have a lot more perspective on it and you can understand, oh, wow, okay, I get it now. And that's the gift of this film, because again, at first, what did it give me? It gave me peace. It gave me acceptance. And now that I'm older and I look at it, I see how they tried to really tackle this issue as realistically as possible, but not take it so far that a child couldn't watch it and get the intended effect out of it. You know, there are so many versions of Mrs. Doubtfire. By what I mean there is that Robin Williams did so many improvisations that they said they could have had like another movie.
You more know? Than one. I think they could have had like PG, PG-13, and R.
I mean, yeah.
Any of them.
That's the talent. And like, I think they might even be doing a documentary on that.
I think
that.
I read that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
which I'm excited about. That would be great.
I can't wait for it. I mean, I want to know more about it. I mean, Robin Williams is an unbelievable performer, and you see him do stand-up, you see him in movies, you see him be serious, you see him be funny, and he's fast. Every single time that you see Robin Williams, he is quick, and that's what makes it so good with some of the jokes that you talked about. He does it so well that, yes, he can say some adult things very quickly, and the kid won't recognize them. But when you're older, you're like, oh, my God, he said what? You know, yeah. It's just like they
well,
did
he's
that
very
a lot.
Rapid fire, like tossing these things out there. And some of the things he's saying when he's like calling Sally Field to pretend to be a caregiver, yeah. You know, so he's making it so that she'll think Mrs. Doubtfire is an angel from heaven are terrible. Like
they're horrible.
He's really bad news. But it doesn't come up until. I didn't really notice that. Like you're balancing like funny and laughter type moments with, you know, these really emotionally difficult moments in a very honest and real way, and I think it works.
Well, and Pierce Brosnan, right? He wasn't James Bond yet, you know, but he had that James Bond look. So you would expect the guy like that. That he had a bunch of sexual partners, didn't want to be tied down, your typical playboy. But that was not the case. The people that you saw that wanted to go out and make a sexual connection were, you know, Robert Prosky and Robin Williams, you know, where they're talking, you know, again, in that big restaurant scene that ultimately leads to the reveal of Daniel as Mrs. Doubtfire. That scene with Robert Prosky and Robin Williams, we saw some alternate versions of it. And I
a
mean,
a lot of them.
It is incredible. These guys are so funny, and they both seem like they're sky high on the drinks. You know, that's what makes it so good, because it's like, oh my God, I fully believe that these guys are drunk and they are talking about, you know, like a possible rendezvous. And it's so damn funny to me to just see Robert Prosky, you know, get hot and bothered. You know, he's a fantastic character actor. I love seeing him, you know, again, in everything. And in this, it's just like when he's with Robin Williams, again, a perfect match for him because he gives and he takes.
Well, he's very solid.
Yes,
to
very
bounce
grounded.
Off of.
Mm-hmm.
And it that one scene is so ridiculous because... Yeah, the issue is Robin Williams keeps going back and forth and changing from Mrs. Doubtfire to himself, and he's trying to have dinner at the same time as two different people, and Robert Prosky thinks that he's got lipstick on him because he's been making out with some waitress or whatever.
Oh, my God,
like,
yeah.
Gosh, you got a friend for me, and like...
Yeah.
It's like, what's going on? Like, these guys are loaded on scotch, and it was just... It's very funny, and that's also why... You know, Mrs. Doubtfire disguise ends up slipping because Daniel is wasted. Like, he's drinking wine at one table and pounding scotch at the other.
Yeah.
And he just, like, loses himself, you know, over the course of that evening. But, yeah, that's a high-pressure scene.
Yeah. It's just such a good pressure cooker. And yeah. When it finally pops off with the reveal, you're like, oh. You feel it. You feel it. You know, you feel like you're in the room yourself. You're like, whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, a very visceral moment. Yeah, the last thing I want to mention, and this is really quick, but it's just something that came to mind. I mean, we had a whole string of movies where we had people in disguises. We had Young Guns 2, right? And, you know, we had Emilio Estevez as a very old man. You know, we had Big Mama's
Rushy
House.
Bill Roberts.
Yes, yes.
We'll probably talk about that maybe, so let me not give away the store.
I'll Make You Famous. Oh, God, I love that movie.
Why don't you pull the trigger and find out?
Best $2.50 I ever spent. So, yeah, we have Young Guns 2. We have Big Mama's House, you know, where Martin Lawrence goes undercover, you know, and he dresses up as a woman. We have, you know, Jackass, of course, right?
Yeah, they do the old man thing.
They do the old man thing.
Tyler Perry Madea.
Yes, Tyler Perry Madea. There are just so many. And I felt like I wasn't aware of them as much until Mrs. Doubtfire, which, you know, kind of was in the middle of this pack. And, you know, of course, we talked about Tootsie, you know. It's, I don't know. There's something about that, that this film, I feel, is the top of that. I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's the top of that. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think because
the makeup, that's it. It must be
the makeup.
Yeah, makeup
is
great. Yeah.
I do feel like there's a major transformation that takes place with Robin Williams, you know, not just like physically, but also mentally and emotionally, you mm-hmm. know, when he's playing Mrs. Doubtfire, he sees the world differently a lot of ways. And yeah, this Daniel still pokes through, but, a big part of him changes through that experience, like we discussed. And I also think that it's sympathetic, you know, like, when I'm thinking about these other kind of disguise movies, I don't know that, you know, the character is such that you really, like, kind of do fall in love with that person. And, like, I do think that you do really like Mrs. Doubtfire. Not Daniel playing the role of Mrs. Doubtfire, but actual Mrs. Doubtfire. You know, she's really a caring and loving person and the kind of person that they did need in their lives at that moment. So I think that that's why it becomes very successful.
Yeah. It's and again, the use of the disguise to obtain what Daniel wants really lends itself to the feeling of conflict, to a war. Yeah. Because, you know, we would see this, you know, in a huge battle. People would go undercover as a member of the opposite side. You know, there are so many things, you know, look older, look younger, whatever the case may be. Dress up like your mother, dress up like your father, the whole thing. Or you could do a prince, like When Doves Cry, and you could do half and half, you know. But it's, yeah, this movie, I really like it. And yeah, what do you think about that?
So there.
There.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
Yeah. Put chicken soup in your pipe.
So I agree. No, I love this movie too. I really enjoyed watching it again. It has been a long time. You know, sometimes we do a comfort film that's something we currently watch like over and over. Sometimes it's something that we used to watch over and over and maybe haven't seen in a long time. This one I think has been quite a while since we watched it. But revisiting it kind of brought up a lot of my memories of how much this did kind of, you know, it's like Gen X therapy, because God knows we didn't get any real therapy, but TV was therapy for a lot of us.
And Mrs. Doubtfire was on TV.
Exactly. Well, that's how we both saw it. I was later on TV. So thanks, Chris Columbus, for giving us all that free therapy.
Yeah, that really helped. Thank you, Robin Williams. Thank you, everyone. It's just such a great one, and I will always go back to this film. Robin Williams has so many great, great performances.
He does. I mean, we definitely have still other movies in the tank.
Absolutely.
To do with Robin Williams. We easily could have done a double month of Robin Williams and just talked and talked and talked about his movies. I mean, as I said, one of my favorite movies of him is just not a very comforting movie, which is Awakenings. And I would say the same thing about, like, Dead Poets. And,
I love Dead Poets.
You know, I almost would talk about that, even though it does have some very not comforting aspects.
Yeah.
And Insomnia.
Insomnia is so good. You have Pacino and you have Williams.
Yeah, and both of them are, like, top of their game performances in that movie. But, you know, maybe not the most comforting. However, does that stop us? No. So
not always, no.
you know, we'll definitely talk about Robin Williams again, but I really enjoyed talking about these three this month, which are particularly comforting Robin Williams performances. So I think that wraps up our episode on Mrs. Doubtfire. Thank you for joining us for this and for our other two Robin Williams selections. Four, if you count, you know, going all the way back in time to Fisher King.
It's like an ace in the hole, you know? We planted that seed early and it grew, guys.
We did.
Yeah.
Next week we'll be back with something special and different, which is that we have the opportunity to have John Harrison join us. John Harrison is pretty much everything you can be to do with film. He's written, he's directed, he's acted, he's composed.
Mm-hmm.
He's an all-around Renaissance man in film. We spoke about him during our Creepshow episode. He did the composing in that film. And we are more than thrilled to welcome him next week to discuss a novel that he's recently written that's out right now that you can read called Passing Through Veils. Check it out before next week because we're going to talk about it. And, you know, just some of the other things that he's done over the course of his really amazing, surprising career.
Yeah, it's an incredible career. We're going to talk about Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. Another favorite of ours. We love that horror anthology.
Yeah, he's done a lot with horror anthology, which, as you guys know, we love. So we are nervous and scared and excited to talk to John Harrison. Tune in for episode 102 to hear that. And then after that, we will return to our regularly scheduled comfort film programming with some holiday films. So we're looking forward to that. We got a good stuff coming up to end the year with.
Yeah.
All right. That's it. Mrs. Doubtfire, episode 101. Robin Williams in the can. We're done.
Woohoo!
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Hope you had a good time. We certainly did. And until next time, stay comfy.
Stay comfy, everybody.